from the rain, finding my way into your big house. Running for that train, big machine to take me downtown. I don't need a friend, I won't rest until I'm cold underground. And sorrows encompass me round. Six-barrel shotgun, loaded revolver at the gates of hell. Revival 10, two-step, whiskey drinking at a cheap motel. When you dig my grave, dig it deep until these church bells ring and sorrows encompass me around. Are you tired of me, darling? When work's all done and fall, I'll still think on you, darling. I remember it all. I remember it all. Take your hands, chase me down into the big mud. I'll never sleep, I don't need nobody to tell me what. Called on God, sitting at my feet with his eyes shut. And sorrows encompass me around. Are you tired of me, darling? When work's all done and fall, I'll still think on you, darling. I remember it all. I remember it all.
Kaya Keita is one of the most promising young performers on the North American folk roots and old-time music scene. A banjo player and singer, she's already carving out her own niche in Appalachian and Canadian traditional music. Originally from Quebec and now based in Toronto, Kaya self-released her first full-length album, Sorrowbound, produced by Chris Bardos in 2014. She's since signed to Kingswood Records in the US. We caught up with Kaya at home in Toronto. So it's great to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me on. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I was very pleased when I received your album. The album, as we mentioned, is entitled Sorrowbound. It's been creating quite a buzz within the folk community generally. And I think mainly because you're still relatively young as far as a folk performer is concerned. I always like to start these conversations, though, by giving you a chance to talk about how you got started, because I find that fascinating. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in music.
Well, I've always grown up around folk music. My grandfather is a luthier. He built harpsichords primarily, and then he got tired of the classical world, so he moved into building guitars and mandolins and things like that. My mom, Tamara Cater, worked in folk music, or has worked in folk music for many years. When I was small, she started running the Ottawa Folk Festival, and then she got a job with the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and now she's the Executive Director of Folk Music Canada. So, you know, lucky me, really, because I was, you know, maybe like 7 or 8 running around, and I remember getting a lesson from Rhiannon Giddens of the Carolina Chocolate Drops when I was like 12, you know. So, any sort of interest in folk music that I had, any nugget of, you know, of interest was really nurtured early on, which I think contributed to my learning of the banjo at such a young age. Mitch Podolick actually first handed me a banjo and taught me how to play clawhammer style, and he's actually the founder of the Winnipeg Folk Festival. And his two philosophies in life are to eat good barbecue and teach people how to play banjo. So so I was one of those people. And, you know, I think I also played the cello for a long time, but I got tired of the classical sort of structure, and I was yearning to be creative outside of that, and the banjo just gave me a voice, really. So I made an EP in 2011, and then in 2012 I made a full-length record, and I received a scholarship to go to school at Davis and Elkins College and study Appalachian music, and here I am now.
I'm intrigued about the fact that not just obviously getting into the banjo, you've explained that really well. I just wonder about how much of the tradition of, you know, old-time music, Appalachian music, traditional Canadian music weaves into this. I mean, there is a huge wealth of music out there. Was that really appealing in its own right that, you know, once you'd learned this instrument, you could start to explore some of these wonderful old tunes?
I don't think that I came into the banjo knowing that I would fall in love with Appalachian music. At that time in my life, I think I would have been receptive to any instrument that wasn't a classical instrument. So I think if someone had put me on a fiddle or put me on a guitar, maybe I would have had just as much passion for it. But Appalachian and old-time music really drew me in because As people know, that when you're a banjo player, you can either play bluegrass or you can play old-time Appalachian music. And one thing, even though I've grown up going to bluegrass festivals and I absolutely love bluegrass music, the bluegrass world is, to me, not as receptive to, you know, female players, to black players, and I'm of Afro-Caribbean ancestry. So the old-time community really embraced me right away. My mom held a garage sale to fund a plane ticket to an old-time gathering in just outside of Asheville, North Carolina, when I was 14. And so I went there for a week, and I really just fell in love with it and fell in love with the people and fell in love with really the sacredness of the music. And that's what's got my heart now, and I don't think it'll ever change.
So when you decided to go to school in Elkins, was that really because you wanted to immerse yourself in the home of this wonderful traditional musical form?
That was the largest part for me. When I was offered the scholarship, it was a choice really for me between holding off a little bit on my career for those 4 years and just learning as much as I could so I can bust out of the gates, you know, knowing a lot more than I did then. It was a really easy decision for me. My mom asked me to mull it over because it did mean that my career would be, you know, a little bit latent in starting, if you will, because it was pretty much right after I'd released my EP. So the choice was, you know, become a full-time musician or go to school for 4 years. I think that any time you're playing a traditional form of music that's not your own, you definitely have a responsibility to learn it and to know it. And to know the people behind it and not just, you know, I didn't want to feel exploitative. And so for me, that was an easy decision.
Can you talk about your studies down in Elkins? I always get intrigued, you know, when you've made this decision that I want to go to school at the same time as develop my music. I'm always intrigued to learn how the two weave together.
It's been difficult and interesting and great all at the same time. So the program that I'm in is an Appalachian string band program, and so it's sort of like a basketball player would be recruited to a school. The basketball player could study whatever they wanted, but they would have to commit a certain amount of hours to a sports team. So that's how it is with us at Davis and Elkins College. So basically, we perform as a string band and dance collective. And so it's percussive dance, ham bone, music, traditional music, all encompassed into about a 60 or a 75-minute show. It was basically a way for me to immerse myself in the traditions and to be able to also learn how to be part of a band, which I never would have gotten that experience if I hadn't gone to school. Learn how to negotiate, learn how to perform different traditions, because we perform Appalachian music, yes, but we also perform Quebecois music. We also perform Irish music. Recently, I was involved in a piece that was a West African dance piece with a fellow tap dancer who's African-American. D&E gives me this opportunity to explore all of these different paths that I think I definitely could do on my own, but that are way more difficult. It's hard when you're really in the nucleus to figure out if you're getting better or how exactly you're learning or how it affects my performance as a solo artist. I've tried to get out there as much as I can and remember that all of D&E really is a resource for my solo performance. So I would go to conferences and still do performances on breaks and stuff. And a lot of the reception I would get would be very positive because people could see that, you know, even though I wasn't out there being a road warrior, I was still learning and improving and growing my craft.
You know, and that sounds a great way to develop your music. I think that's outstanding. I'd like to ask you about your influences. Again, you're in this incredibly rich traditional field of music. I mean, there is just so much out there. Tell me about some of the people that have inspired you and influenced you in your career so far.
Sure. Nina Simone is a big one for me. I think that I identify most, I was thinking about this the other day, and I think that I identify most with female solo performers in particular. So Nina Simone was a ferocious performer, amazing performer. Another one for me who's a banjo player was Ola Bell Reed, Gene Ritchie, of course. Billie Holiday is a great influence as well. I also have been inspired by many African-American performers. So Dom Flemons, who's still young, he's like 35, but he's a great, great influence on me and also a great mentor. Yeah, I think those are the ones that, you know, come off the top of my head. I also have gotten a lot of influence from R&B performers. So Erykah Badu, Lauryn Hill are big ones. I think mostly I just admire their ability to express themselves freely in an artistic way. And so that's what I take from both of them.
You know, that's an interesting group of people you've suggested, because knowing that you're at the start of your career, you mentioned you've got an EP, you've got the first album, you're working on the second, but, you know, you talk about influences that are broader than the music you're playing just now. And I'm moving the conversation forwards, but I really feel like I have to do this. I sense that there is a great opportunity to explore in music because of the people that you've already talked about inspiring you.
Oh, yes, for sure. And it's funny because I was just, my producer, Chris Bartosz, was just over yesterday. And we were talking about that. We were talking about, for the new album that's coming out next year, we're going to record in the winter, we are talking about how we can stay rooted in tradition, but push it, you know, further. And so that I can, you know, find my voice and grow my voice within it. And oddly enough, on my EP, Old Soul, that we recorded in 2011, there's a track off of it called Rappin' Shady Grove. And so I sing the melody of Shady Grove, and then I rap over it. And Chris and I just did it for fun, like, you know, because we needed a fifth song, and we were in the studio, and we had time to kill. And it ended up being one of the most popular songs off of the EP, you know, this, like, kind of half hip-hop, half old-time song that we did just sort of farting around. So I think that I definitely want to incorporate more genres into the next album, not to overwhelm the old time facet of it, because that is the main part, but just to sort of push the music even further and push boundaries, hopefully in a new and progressive way.
Let's talk about the Sorrowbound album, and want to make sure that we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. And I have to say, I'm really inspired by what you just told me, but tell me about Sorrowbound. You recorded it in 2012, and I think it was released in 2014. It's just been picked up by Kingswood Records in the US. We'll talk about that a little later. The thing I notice when I look at this album is how much of the album is you. You know, there are songs that you're already writing yourself. We started off with one of those, which I think leads into the title of the album. The song was When Sorrows Encompass Me Round, which obviously is close to Sorrowbound. I want to give you a chance to talk about that and how you like to work on your music.
Okay, yeah. So Sorrowbound basically was done in 5 days on a very small budget in Chris's small studio in Toronto. And basically, it was a culmination of the songs that I had been writing since the EP and the traditional songs that I had been learning at school. So Moonshiner is an example of one of those. It was a song, it's a song that's by Currence Hammonds of the Hammonds family in West Virginia. And it was taught to me by my professor, Emily Miller. So I think it was about half and half for us. We did half trad and then half of my own songs. And it was a really fun experience to try and bridge those elements and to try and figure out my own sound within that. For me, I think I will always respect Sorrowbound because I think it gave me a way to sort of anchor myself within traditional music. And, you know, trying to establish yourself as a trad performer is a little bit difficult because you don't want to get pigeonholed into, you know, being that artist that only plays traditional music, nor do you want to be seen as just a singer-songwriter. So we've been focusing a lot on, you know, who I want to be as an artist, and I think at this point what I'm looking to do is create a little bit more. My process with Sorrowbound really was just to figure out who I was within the music, and it was a beautiful experience. It really was.
What I'd like to do now is to play another track from the album. You mentioned Moonshiner as being a song that traditional song that you brought to the album. This song is interesting because it is a cappella and also features Melanie Brulé and Jada Kelly. Can you talk about the recording of this song?
Sure. It was actually pretty funny. I had already had the parts recorded on my computer. So there was lead, tenor, baritone, and bass. And I know Jada and Mel really well, just from around the music community. And I knew right away when I was thinking of putting the song on the album that their voices would perfectly fit the two parts that I needed. They were right in the same range. None of them had ever sung old-time a cappella before, but they were so gung-ho about it, and they were so great about it. So I sent them the parts while I was at school, and they, you know, learned them and sort of played with them a little bit. And then they came into the studio, and we basically had about maybe 45 minutes to practice all together, and then we just ran the takes one after the other. And it was a lot of fun, you know, like we would sing one take and then Mel would say, oh, wait, I think I can get this better. Or Jada would say, oh, yeah, I have that part now. I know it. Because it's very different. I mean, learning a part off of a recording and then actually singing it all together. But they were consummate professionals and they just nailed it, you know, within 5 or 6 takes, which was astounding. They're musicians that play, you know, folk music and Quebecois music. And so it was amazing to see them just nail an old-time song like that.
Let's play that just now. This is Moonshiner from Kaya Cater featuring Melanie Brulé and Jada Kelly from the wonderful album Sorrowbound. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
He's been a moonshiner for many long years. He spent all his money on whiskey and beer, and his breath is as sweet wish he was mine. Her parents don't allow him to enter their door. Good morning, corn liquor, I'll try you once more. And his breath is as sweet as the dew on the vine. God bless that moonshiner, oh, I wish he was mine. She tore out his pockets and stitched up the seams. She fed that moonshiner on sweet milk and cream. And his breath is as sweet as the dew on the vine. God bless that moonshiner, oh, I wish he was mine. He'll back up some holler and set up his still. He'll sell you a gallon for $2 bill. And his breath is as sweet as the dew on the God bless that moonshiner, oh, I wish he was mine.
That's Moonshiner from Kaya Cater from the wonderful album Sorrowbound. Kaya is our guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're talking about her music. We've been playing some tracks from the wonderful Sorrowbound album. And Kaya, I want to steer to the future. We did touch on it a little bit in the first half of the interview. One of the things I found exciting was the fact that you mentioned that you've been picked up by Kingswood Records in the US, and I think they're going to be releasing Sorrowbound on their own label. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And then let's talk about the album that you're working on now.
Sure. So my album, Sorrowbound, will be released on Kingswood Records on June 18th. It's very exciting. I had had a relationship with Kingswood Records. They were interested in me, I think, from about a year ago, and they'd seen me at conferences. And the reason they were interested in me, they were telling me, was because the label they run is largely a label that's founded on bridging traditions between older performers and younger performers. And so if you go and look at their label, they really have either performers, artists over 60 or under 30. And so the reason that they were so interested in me, they told me, was because I was actively trying to take older music and older traditions and reinvent them and reinterpret them. And that's, I think, the direction that they're looking to take their label in. And so we found each other again at a conference and finally sat down and started to have conversations. And I ended up signing a 2-year contract, so they're re-releasing Sorrowbound in the U.S., and then they also are going to have my next album. And my next album is well on the way. I actually just finished a song for it last night, so I'm in my creating phase, and hopefully what I'd like to do with the next album is have more songs of mine on it, and also more French songs, and of course some traditional songs. The beauty about having Kingswood with me is that I can first of all get more financial support for what I'm trying to do, and also I can get my music out in the U.S. in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do at all before. So Kingswood Records is working with Hearst Music Promotions, and they're getting my music out there. Sorrow Band is premiering on the Bluegrass Situation next week, and a couple of other places like that. And so really what's nice about it is that I can just focus on making the best record that I can with Chris. And you know, we want it to be, of course, reminiscent of Sorrow Bound, but also pushing a little bit past that. And as Chris said, we're only going to have golden eggs on the album. So we're hoping for about 12 tracks and more instruments than we had before. We're looking maybe at having some brass, having some cello, viola, bass, and just making it a little bit more orchestral.
That sounds wonderful. You know, I'm really thrilled for you. It sounds like your career is developing really, really nicely. Can I ask you about the playing live, how you like to do that? Obviously, you have written a lot of songs that can be just played by you and a banjo, but you also talk about wanting to play with other people. Tell us a little bit about the live experience currently.
Well, right now, I've been playing mainly with a fiddler. His name is Scotty Leach, and we go to school together, actually, and he's the fiddler in our string band. And the beauty about playing with him is that we know each other so well, personally and musically, that, you know, any music we play on stage develops organically, and you know, you can see a real connection between us. And so that's what I look for, really, in people I play on stage with, is this connection. I've played with Rosalind Dennett, who's also a fine fiddler. I often play with Chris whenever he's available. He's a busy guy. But the beauty with Chris is that he can play bass, he can play, he plays the five-string fiddle, he plays a little guitar for me. Usually, I like to have just one side player. And, you know, often I won't have anybody. So I'm going on tour this summer. And in Prince Edward Island, I'll have Scotty. So Scotty will be playing with me for the dates there. But after that, I'll just be solo. And solo is how I started out, you know, and I'm fairly comfortable with that. I'm fairly comfortable with my stagecraft. I feel like I still want it to grow and develop, and I still want to become, you know, more of a professional on stage as much as I can. But, you know, there's nothing like voice and banjo, really. And I can't be scared of doing that, because that's where my music has developed from. So I want to be really conscious of not getting too far into having a full band, because I still need to shine as I am.
Kaya, that is so well put. It's been really great to talk to you today. If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
They can go to my website, www.kayacater.com, and everything is there. Otherwise, I have SoundCloud. I also have a Facebook page if anyone would like to keep up with what I'm doing or where I'm going. You can also sign up for my mailing list. Otherwise, I'm pretty much all over the internet.
That's great. That's a good place to be in this day and age. We're going to finish with another song from Sorrow Bound. I thought we'd play the final track, which is one of your own compositions, and it's entitled Come and Rest. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually wrote Come and Rest about napping. I like to say that. It was basically, I think, the first song that I really tried kind of going into outer space with my banjo. I'm really proud of it. I love it. One of the beautiful things about Come and Rest on the album is that my aunt, Julia Cater, actually sings harmony on it. And she has been one of my great influences musically. She's a fantastic singer, consummate musician, and she's always sort of nurtured my love for music. So it was only fitting that she should be a voice on this album.
That's great. What a perfect way to finish. Kaya Cater, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you. Likewise, Jan.
This is Kaya Cater with Come and Rest from the wonderful album Sorrow Bound, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Come and rest.